On January 1st, 1989, Canada and the United States finally opened up to free trade with each other.
I consider this agreement one of the major achievements of my two terms in this office. I think our nations have set an example for the rest of the world. In the face of rising protectionism, we forged an agreement that eliminates tariffs and opens markets and will create jobs on both sides of the border. And
as part of that deal, some in Canada faced the threat of a huge surge in imports from its giant southern neighbor. Canadian companies and their workers would suddenly have to compete with American goods newly available in the Canadian market. Looking back, Canadian workers and industries facing that new competition from America were more likely to lose their jobs. But perhaps surprisingly, those same Canadian workers also adjusted relatively quickly. They found new jobs. And over the next two decades, it turns out, their wages and earnings did not suffer. The Canadians seem to have done okay. This episode explores that puzzle. Why was this Canadian worker experience with international trade so different from workers in other countries that have had bigger struggles with globalization? To tackle all this, I will be joined by a very special guest.
Peter Morrow, University of Toronto.
Peter Morrow is an economics professor at the University of Toronto. He's an expert on trade and workers. And today, Peter is going to share results from some of his new research into Canada's response to free trade with the United States. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Chad.
You are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade and policy. I'm your host, Chad Bown, the Reginald Jones Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington. Peter, to start things off, let's talk about the trade relationship between Canada and the United States in the mid-1980s before their free trade agreement. They did have a limited free trade agreement for cars and car parts, the 1965 Auto Pact. But how would you characterize their relationship for everything else?
Prior to the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement, Canadian and U.S. exports to one another were similar in some respects, and this is what you would expect from them both being high productivity countries with relatively educated workforces. But there were also important differences in terms of the structure of trade. For example, the United States exported more machinery to Canada, whereas Canada would send more oil and wood-related products back to the U.S. And this is sort of what you would expect from endowments. And then obviously there was strong two-way trade in auto parts dating back to the Auto Pact of 1965. But there were tariffs. Canada did have tariffs on U.S. exports into the Canadian market. On average, Canada's protection was about 10%, and the United States was provided itself with less protection, maybe 3 or 4%. There were lots of important differences, though, across goods. So if you're a Canadian and you wanted to buy a wool jacket or some gloves for those long winter months, you had to pay a 20% tariff on those if they were imported from the U.S. Whereas if you're a Canadian farmer and you wanted to import dairy machinery, that wasn't protected far less, roughly 2%. So there was a lot of variation across different industries in terms of how precisely protected they were prior to the trade agreement.
Was a free trade agreement with the United States in the 1980s a no-brainer politically in Canada?
It wasn't obvious at all that this trade agreement was going to be ratified by Canada. Canada had always held the United States sort of at arm's length, and this was a very controversial trade agreement to implement. And the Canadian Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney, had started negotiating this agreement, and it had actually been agreed to by the negotiators in 1987 and signed by President Reagan and Prime Minister Brian Mulroney on January 2nd, 1988. But then what happened was that it became the topic of the Canadian 1988 federal election, with the Conservative Party being in support of the trade agreement and the Liberal Party in opposition. And it wasn't clear at all who was going to win this federal election.
It's an issue most Canadians say they do not understand. And perhaps because of that, it has become the issue of the election campaign.
That is the facts in the free trade agreement. It creates new wealth, it creates new prosperity, and it gives British Columbia an opportunity that others in Canada have enjoyed for decades.
I'm not going to let Mr. Mulrooney destroy a great 120-year-old dream called Canada. I'm not going to do it.
The decisions made that affect the people of Canada and their future ought to be made in Ottawa and not in Washington.
Canadians do not believe in fear and falsehoods, and they will reject it on the 21st of November.
The Conservatives will...
And it was really only in November 1988, when the Conservative Party actually came from behind to win, that ratification of the trade agreement was assured.
Why was the trade agreement so controversial in Canada? What was Canada worried about?
The way the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement was viewed going in was it was definitely going to be transformative. So outside of the auto sector, a lot of Canadian firms were constrained in the size of the market that they were able to sell to. And there was some sense that allowing Canadian firms to access the US market might allow them to achieve higher scales of production and perhaps lower average costs through increasing returns to scale. If these gains from increasing returns to scale weren't realized, then Canadian firms might just open up to import competition, in which case there might be substantial job loss. For those who were opposed to the trade agreement, what's interesting is that it seems to have been more about sovereignty and the actual implementation of the trade agreement, which stirred up the most negative feelings. For example, there was a famous judge, a retired judge from Alberta, Marjorie Bowker, who was actually pro-free trade, and she disagreed with how it was being implemented and how things like dispute resolution were going to be imposed on Canada and what kind of power would the United States have on Canada, and would this make Canada overly reliant on the United States in some sense?
There have been some famous articles written about Judge Bowker. Given the Trump administration's approach to renegotiating the NAFTA in 2017, she might have been a little bit right about concerns that Canada might someday become overly reliant on the United States. Okay, let's go back again to the 1980s. Tell us a little bit more about the differences in pre-trade agreement tariff rates across industries in the two countries and the size of the tariff cuts that were going to result from the free trade agreement.
Going into the trade agreement, both countries had high levels of protection on certain goods, such as textiles, coats, clothing. But there were also industries where the Canadian tariff cut was larger than the U.S. tariff cut. And there's other industries where the U.S. tariff cut was larger than the Canadian tariff cut. So, for example, if we think about communications equipment, telephone equipment, audio equipment, the Canadian tariff cut was larger than the U.S. tariff cut. But in medical equipment, the reverse is true, with the U.S. tariff cut being larger than the Canadian tariff cut. And when you look at the resulting trade flows that came out of the tariff cuts associated with the free trade agreement, trade flows responded in a way that you would expect. High tariff cut industries had larger increases in trade flows between the two countries.
Your focus is going to be on Canadian workers. What worker data are you able to examine?
We're looking at this really amazing data set that's been assembled by Statistics Canada. This is a confidential data set that we had to apply to use. This data set is based on individuals' tax records that allows us to follow workers for 21 years across any job that they had during this time span. So for example, even if a worker loses their job due to import competition, we can see what happened to them after they lost their job. Were they able to recover? Did things get worse? Were they forced to move across provinces? So one of the nice things about this data set is that we're able to see a worker's annual earnings from each employer that they worked for during a given year. Expanding over 21 years, this allows us to see how their income evolved over this time span.
This is amazingly detailed information, and there are a lot of outcomes you can look at for Canadian workers exposed to new competition from the United States. Where did you start?
The way we structured our study was to look at workers who were employed in 1988 in industries that then subsequently lost protection due to Canadian tariff cuts. We then focus on just a couple of very simple outcomes. For example, we started by looking at the simple question of, did workers in more affected industries lose their jobs more frequently? We also looked at how many years they worked overall. Did they have long spells of unemployment? Or did they work as many years as other workers? And finally, we simply looked at their earnings over the time span covered by the data. And we did that because we wanted to know, even if they kept their jobs, were they, in some sense, forced to work for lower wages?
What did you find, and were you surprised?
So we started our analysis by looking at what happens to workers if they're in industries that saw Canadian tariff cuts. And we find that there were fewer jobs and lower incomes. Workers had higher probabilities of layoffs, workers worked in fewer years at those jobs, and their incomes from those jobs went down. These results weren't surprising to us at all. This is what has been found by other researchers in the past. What we were able to do using this data from Statistics Canada was ask, what happens to these workers after they lose their jobs? Were they able to recover, or did things get worse over time?
When you examined what happened to Canadian workers over the longer run, what did you find? Were they able to recover and find new jobs at reasonable wages?
Looking at the longer run, we actually found that workers were able to respond fairly positively to import competition in Canada. Workers tended to move out of their initial industries into other jobs relatively smoothly, to the degree that in the long run, their incomes didn't look any different from workers who had initially worked in industries that didn't see any import competition. This was really surprising to us because in a number of different contexts, researchers have found prolonged negative labor market experiences for workers who lose their job due to import competition. For example, David Otter, David Doran, and Gordon Hansen find that for the China shock in the United States, workers had pretty bad labor market outcomes for a long time. In the Brazilian context, my co-author Brian Kovac and Rafael Dix Carneiro found that Brazilian workers had really bad labor market outcomes for a long period of time after trade liberalization in Brazil. Given how different this result was from what so many other researchers have found, we were really curious about why did this happen? Why did things work out this way in Canada?
Workers in Canada affected by new competition from the United States that lost their jobs were able to adjust. To figure out why, where did you look?
To think about why we found the results that we found, we first looked at some theories that ended up not being very good explanations for our results. So one possibility was that this change in tariffs didn't really cause changes in trade flows such that the shock wasn't that big. And that's just absolutely not true. There was a huge expansion in trade into Canada from the United States in response to these tariff cuts. And this was much larger than the expansion of Chinese imports into the US during the China shock, and also larger than the increase in imports from China into Canada during the same time. The second potential explanation that we looked at was that maybe Canadian tariff cuts and U.S. tariff cuts offset each other in the same industry. So if you're a Canadian worker producing textiles and you lower your tariffs by 10% and the U.S. also lowers its tariffs by 10%, maybe you don't have to do anything. Maybe these tariffs offset in some sense. But that's just also not true in the data. We do see workers, one, losing their jobs in their initial industries, and two, moving across industries, which wouldn't happen if tariffs were simply offsetting each other. A final explanation is that the macroeconomy was booming in Canada during this period, and there were simply lots of jobs to go around. This just isn't true. There was actually a really bad recession in North America, and especially bad in Canada during the early 1990s when these tariff cuts were implemented.
If none of those theories explain it, then what did explain why these Canadian workers were able to recover and find new jobs?
We did find evidence that four factors do have some ability to explain our results. First, when the tariff cuts were enacted, Canadian workers really moved quickly into less affected industries. This really stands in stark contrast to the United States experienced with the China shock, where workers moved from one affected industry to another affected industry to another affected industry. Canadian workers really had a better sense of how to escape these shocks. Second, we found that U.S. tariff cuts in related industries may have helped speed this transition. We did this in two steps. First, we looked at the period before the trade agreement, and we asked, how easy is it for workers to move across specific pairs of industries? So, using the communications equipment and medical equipment example from before, suppose that we found large flows of workers between those two sectors before the trade agreement. This would suggest that Canadian workers could transition between those two industries relatively easily if they needed to. Also remember that there were differential tariff cuts across these two industries. This allowed Canadian workers to move across industries within manufacturing and not move into other industries where they might have had to really retool their skills and incur large adjustment costs.
So there, when the U.S. is cutting its tariff in the medical equipment sector by a lot, that helps Canadian exporters of medical equipment and their workers, because Canadian workers in the communications equipment sector have similar skills. They can transition out of the shrinking communications equipment sector and into the expanding sector for medical equipment. Okay, but I cut you off. You said there were four factors. What else did you look at?
We looked for whether the trade agreement caused Canadian firms to incur mass layoffs. Mass layoffs are generally defined as when a firm sheds employment by, say, 20% or more over some short time span. There's been a lot of work done showing that mass layoffs are really bad for workers. And this might be because local areas are decimated and these mass layoffs somehow make things much worse than an idiosyncratic layoff. We didn't find any evidence of mass layoffs by Canadian firms in response to Canadian tariff cuts. Fourth, we found that Canadian firms largely responded to the Canadian tariff cuts by hiring fewer workers who are entering into the labor market. This is important because they could have responded by shedding workers who were already there, but they didn't do this. This means that older workers who might have built up a lot of experience and a lot of tenure at firms didn't need to find new jobs, and that new workers to the labor force, perhaps younger workers, simply had to look in different places that they might have looked in previously.
Overall, you find that Canadian workers did much better when opening up to trade with the U.S. in the 1990s than U.S. workers did when opening up to trade with China in the 2000s, or than Brazilian workers did when also opening up to trade with the world in the 1990s. But why? Is the answer just that the Canadian labor market is different and we should all just try to be more like Canada?
So it'd be really convenient if the Canadian labor market is just different somehow, and this explains our findings. For example, suppose there was some Canadian policy that everyone could just replicate that would make all countries invulnerable to import competition. But that's not the case. We find that Canada responded roughly as you'd expect due to the China shock in the mid-90s and early 2000s. There were mass layoffs, there were reduced years worked, reduced earnings. So it's not that the Canadian labor market responds perfectly to all shocks. The implication is that there was something about this particular episode for Canadians that was different. Canadian workers successfully adjusted to the shock, but were less successful in other contexts.
The fact that Canadian workers also suffered, just like the American workers, when facing new import competition from China suggests Canada is not immune from these problems. So there is this puzzle, but it's not a Canada puzzle. It's a Canada-U.S. free trade agreement puzzle. And this one is a relatively good puzzle to have to work on. Okay, having spent a lot of time on this, what is your advice for where future researchers should look? In the United States, we have TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, dedicated to workers hurt by import competition. Describe for us Canada's domestic policies designed to help worker adjustment, and whether those might be part of the explanation.
Canada doesn't have a trade adjustment assistance program the way the United States does. The reason for this is that it's generally folded in unemployment insurance. The idea, and if you read the history of this, is that Canadian policymakers said, why would we want to treat unemployment caused by import competition any differently than we treat other forms of unemployment? It would be interesting to see, is there an intersection of healthcare provision and how people respond to unemployment shocks? And how does that affect how we think about import competition-induced unemployment and potential recoveries therefrom? Maybe a hypothesis is that the trade shock was better understood. If we can get better information on that, that would be amazing. I think what's really standing out to us right now is that there's room for really important research to understand why Canada's response from the shock was not so bad. So I really wish there was a smoking gun, but it's still an open question.
Stepping back, are there warnings to how we should interpret your results?
We're not saying no one was hurt. There were clearly corners of the labor market that did see depressed earnings for periods of time. However, what we don't see is broad swaths of the population having catastrophic labor market outcomes. So it's, while being optimistic about the lack of truly horrible labor market outcomes, we still have to keep in mind that there were portions of the labor market that were affected. Another caveat is that we're only able to look at relative performance across workers and industries. So it may have been the case that all workers were better off just by differing amounts, or all workers were worse off just by differing amounts. We can't really say anything about that, but we think that's a great topic for future research.
As my last question, what would you suggest to policymakers are key takeaways from your research?
So just for a moment, I'd like to step away from our results as they are. And I'd just like to say one of the key lessons for policymakers is it's really important to have a well-funded and robust statistical agency that has the institutions to engage with academic researchers. We couldn't have done this project without the data that's at Statistics Canada. And there's better and better data coming out all the time. And making sure that statistical agencies and academics can use this data is, I think, really one of something that should not be dismissed as not important. In addition, I think another lesson is that it's useful to use this data to come back and look at longstanding questions. Again, data is getting better all the time, and there's some questions that are outstanding that become answerable as time passes.
Peter, thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
And that is all for Trade Talks. A huge thanks to Peter Morrow at the University of Toronto. Do check out Peter's paper with Brian Kovac at Carnegie Mellon University titled "The Long-Run Labor Market Effects of the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement." I will post a link to the paper on the episode page of the Trade Talks website. Thanks to Melina Kolb, our supervising producer. Thanks to Sarah Toot on digital. As always, thanks to Colin Warren, our audio guy. Do follow us on Twitter or X. We're on @trade_talks. That's not one but two underscores, @trade_talks. Because when it comes to the number of studies to learn from how workers adjust to new competition from international trade, two is better than one.